Looking for news and politics talk for Christians? You found it right here. It's time for another episode of Christian Polititalk with Michael and Mary Beth.
All right. Here we are, another evening of Christian Polititalk. Hope everybody's had a good beginning or a good end to their week, rather. Really? You got something to start us off with over there tonight?
I do.
All right.
It's devotion time with Mary Beth.
Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct your paths. That's from Proverbs 3, 5 through 6. Proverbs is known as the book of wisdom. Naturally, we all want to make wise decisions, but there are times in life when it's difficult to know how to proceed. When we encounter a season when we can't see a clear path forward, we often attempt to figure things out on our own. Usually this leads to a dead-end road of frustration. King Solomon, the author of much of the book of Proverbs, offers a solution. He instructs us not to try to figure things out on our own, but to trust God with a whole heart and obey him in every area of our lives. God's ways are often beyond our understanding. That comes from Isaiah 55, 8 and 9. However, he invites us into a relationship where we know him so intimately that even when we don't understand what the next step is, we trust that he will lead us on the right path. The prayer tonight is, Father, even when I don't understand what's happening, I will have confidence in your goodness. Help me to trust that every outcome will be for my ultimate good and your glory.
Amen. Some interesting things been going on in the news this week, right?
Mm-hmm.
And also tonight, later on the show, we're going to finish up this anchor series that we've been doing. And tonight we're going to be talking about when the storm comes, and the storms of life are coming. And when they do, only Jesus will prevail as the firm and secure anchor. So that's the way that, you know, we need to look at it and see it. And we're going to be talking about that later on in the show. You ready to dig into some news?
Sure.
Politics, current events, it's what's going on in the world. It's time for the news.
So, interestingly enough, you know, there's been a lot of news going back and forth about Letitia James and New York and Trump. And now there's an influential pollster, you know, that says the New York AG seizing of Trump's property would have pivotal impact on the election. Basically, they're saying that, you know, if they take this property as unconstitutional as everything is with that, there's a Republican strategist called Frank Luntz, and he's called Trump's critics, like his critics, like stupid, basically.
Well, they are, because it's violating the Eighth Amendment.
It is.
And, you know, just above and beyond that, asking someone to pony up that kind of cash is just ridiculous, because everyone knows that his money is tied up in his real estate. And, you know, I have a friend who's an accountant, and she's told me that, you know, when you're looking at something like that and someone wants to seize your property, it really is a subjective amount of money. Mm-hmm. So really, if you look at what she's trying to seize, it's like ridiculous, because that property could be worth anything.
And here's the larger scale of all this. There are no victims here.
No, there aren't.
There's no victims that are going to get paid on this.
Yep, no restitution.
This is just basically, you know, her pretty much trying to complete what she ran her whole campaign on getting.
Exactly.
Getting that position. She was going to go after Trump.
No matter what it costs or what it looks like. And if they go through with this, that's not the only influencer who's saying stuff about that. They're saying that it's, if they do that, the American public is going to say, well, then we're all, you know, potential victims of this, and it's going to push Trump over the edge. So, you know, if that's what she's going to do, then she might get her way in that she, quote unquote, gets Trump. But in retrospect, she's probably going to be like, well, that didn't really do what I wanted it to do.
Right. And if they take his stuff, you know, it's going to, you know, Trump's going to be like, you know, here's the proof that the establishment and a swamp in Washington, D.C. is alive, right?
Absolutely. And I mean, and that they're pointing fingers at him and trying to take him out by any means necessary. Yeah,
the conspiracy to deny him the presidency is basically. And I mean, every time they've indicted him with something, it's just pushed him up higher and higher in the polls.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, and if they're not seeing that, and even in 7 swing states, Trump is up by the margin of error in 5 out of 7 of those swing states.
Mm-hmm.
And why is that happening?
Because people are starting to see that the types of things that he's being forced to deal with, there's no legal precedent for this.
Well, it's all part of the Biden campaign.
Yeah, and you know, and this was another thing they were talking about with that, is that if he is going to be held to this precedent, that means that anyone in the future is also going to be held to this precedent.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
You know, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. But, of course, Democrats will do everything that they can to try to deny that if it should happen.
Yep. You know, and there's another interesting article. It says Trump says he has nearly $500 million in cash and suggests he could afford bond in New York. And the AG, you know, slams, you know, he's basically slammed the judge.
Mm-hmm.
He has until Monday to secure a bond or face possibility of the beginning of assets being seized, right? So,
right, but if they seize them, does that mean that they put a lien on the properties? Or does that mean that they seize them and they take control? Because what happens to the people in Trump Tower?
Well, you know, and here's the thing. What happens to the people that have businesses in there or live there?
Yes, exactly.
And everything else. And
I mean, effectively, wouldn't that mean the government was now there?
Well, they're trying to go after their home, after his homes. They're trying to go after Mar-a-Lago and all this other stuff.
And property in Westchester?
Yep. And it is a civil fraud judgment that even the banks are like, you know, we're not crying foul here. So, you know, it's just one of those things. I guess we're going to have to wait and see what happens tomorrow. But, you know, it's a bit crooked.
It's funny because, you know, I look at these people who are like billionaires, like your Elon Musk or, you know, your Jeff Bezos. And I mean, you would think that these folks who are billionaires would be looking very closely at what's going on with Trump, because if ever someone wanted to take them to task, they would ultimately be part of the same thing. I think as a billionaire, I'd be like, I'm going to stake you, buddy, and we'll just call it good.
Yep. And here's something else interesting that happened this week, and it goes kind of along the same lines. You know, the Hunter influence peddling hearing and all that was going on this week, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there was a rather wrong statement made that came across.
So.
And it comes down to RICO is not a crime.
Oh, right. Right. Thank you, AOC.
Yeah. So, so everything that Fani Wilson's trying to do in Georgia, right? So does that mean all that's going to be dropped? I mean, really?
Again,
RICO's not a crime.
Again, right? I mean, if we're talking apples, then yeah.
So, you know, it's almost like it's, you know, good for thee and not for me kind of thing.
That's the way that the last 8 years have been,
mm-hmm.
almost 8 years.
Yep.
You know, because he was dealing with all this junk when he was president, and now it's been 4 more years of him not being president that they've still been trying to nail him.
Yep.
And, you know, I don't understand why they keep trying to do this, because the American public, I mean, yes, there are people that live under rocks, but if you haven't heard about this stuff and you're not offended by this, or it's not, you know, piquing your spidey senses where you're like, this looks really bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if you're not a fan of Trump's, it's still a bad situation that no individual needs to be finding themselves in.
Yep. And here's something else interesting that's happening. Have you heard that, someone from the RNC was actually hired into NBC to be a political analyst?
Really?
Yeah, Ronna McDaniel was hired by NBC to be a political analyst, and people at NBC are basically losing their mind over this.
Oh, I'm sure.
Because she was the RNC chair.
Absolutely.
The former chair.
Yeah, yeah.
And this news host, Kristen Welker, on Sunday during a contentious interview, after, of course, McDaniel was hired by NBC to be a contributor, Welker questioned McDaniel's support for Trump as the head of the RNC during the heated interview and asked if McDaniel enabled the former president to spread election lies.
Really?
Yeah, liberals, including many figures within NBC, have lambasted the network for hiring McDaniel, calling the move appalling. Why? Because they're actually going to bring some of the other side into that network? Some truth into that network? I mean, what's so bad about that? Do you think that there's not some Democrats that work for Fox? Because there definitely are.
Well, yeah. And, you know, I just think that because if it was somebody like the current House Speaker, you know, if he were not in government right now, I mean, if he was a private citizen again and they hired him, it probably would not be same, because he's seen as more of a liberal Republican.
Mm-hmm.
And so I could see them hiring somebody like that, but somebody who's dyed in the wool, you know, right wing. Yeah, no, that's not going to happen.
Look, here are the facts. It's been 4 years. Okay. 4 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
They are still digging and trying to hook former President Trump with something. They keep throwing lines out there and trying to hook something rather than trying to work for the people. My question is, how many millions of dollars have been spent at the extent of this that comes out of taxpayers' money that they're doing all this stuff? And meanwhile, we're sitting here drowning in debt and inflation as, you know, the regular people of this country. How many people sit around and think about that?
You know, but you know, also something that's been in the news this week as of Friday, speaking of Marjorie Taylor Greene, and Mike Johnson, the House Speaker, she's called to have him removed. I mean, it's more of a warning. It got right to the point where they were going to take the vote and then they didn't do it. But, she and several other, Republicans do not have his back.
Nope, they don't. And that's a shame. I mean, it seems like the party is kind of like wavering a little bit.
Splintering a little bit.
Yep. But, you know, we don't need to be in this kind of a situation right now, because things are very, pivotal right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are the things that we need to be really concerned about.
Yeah.
The other thing that's really pivotal and hidden at this moment is a bombing in Russia that ISIS has taken responsibility for.
Well, isn't that a pip?
Yeah. And, you know, Putin is kind of on, you know, the high horse right now. There are there's a lot going on there that we need to be in prayer about and watching, because this could have global consequences.
Well, I mean, I think it's very interesting that a terrorist cell got that far inside Russia.
Well, you know, the U.S. is warning Americans about imminent attack in Moscow, and it proves prophetic 2 weeks later. So the U.S. has been warning American citizens over there, you know, to not go into large groups, large crowds, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And now, 2 weeks before Friday's attack, it's left more than 130 people dead. And the U.S. Embassy sent out a warning to Americans to avoid large gatherings, including concerts, because of imminent plans for an attack by extremists.
Mm-hmm.
And the embassy is monitoring reports that extremists have imminent plans to target large gatherings in Moscow, to include concerts, and U.S. citizens should be advised to avoid large gatherings over the next 48 hours, stated in a March 7th alert.
I'd be peacing out of there anyway.
ISIS claimed responsibility for Friday's attack, which the U.S. has confirmed despite Russian officials trying to point the blame at Ukraine.
Oh, please.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm just wondering how long it's going to be until something else happens here. I don't want something else to happen here.
Nope.
Don't misunderstand me. But what I am saying is, with the crisis that we have at both borders, really,
mm-hmm.
What are we setting ourselves up for? What is the Biden administration setting us up for? You know, it's been a while since there's been anything major that's happened here. But I'm just kind of wondering,
yep,
when that's going to happen.
Well, you know, the bad thing about this, despite all these warnings, Vladimir Putin dismissed the U.S. warnings as just, quote unquote, blackmail.
Well,
days before this attack.
He's not exactly the sharpest tool in the shed. He's a little wacky.
Yep. So, I mean, that is something that we've got to keep our eyes on. You know, got to remain in prayer for everybody involved there. And
absolutely.
And it's sad.
And we need to pray that stuff is not going to happen here, too.
Oh, definitely. You know, so there's a lot going on back and forth now between Zelensky and Putin, and these kind of conversations just don't need to be happening right now.
Yeah, and you know, and everybody needs around here, not around here, but in the United States, needs to be fully aware that this is an election year, and we know how the last election year went.
Yep.
And all the issues that were had with the election, let's just leave it at that. But ultimately, I wouldn't be surprised to see something like we were talking about the other day, the closer we get to this election, to try to derail it.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of people are saying that this attack is, you know, a very dangerous echo of the botched Afghanistan withdrawal.
Oh, I mean, that wouldn't surprise me one bit.
And what you were just saying, Senator Cotton said he's worried that terrorists could carry out an attack in the U.S. as well.
Absolutely. I mean, you're not thinking with your noggin,
mm-hmm,
if this is not something that has occurred to you already. You know, but if you haven't, because, you know, you're not really following the news on a regular basis, this is it. This is the wake-up call, everybody. Yep. This is just to let you know that this is a possibility.
Well, you know, that withdrawal was very chaotic.
To say the least.
Fairly disastrous, you know, on a lot of levels. And that is something, like I said, this can have global implications.
And, you know, we're not even hearing any more about that. And nope. You know that not everybody's out.
Right. So, wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's just some of the things. And then looks like there's also some news finally about Kate Middleton, right?
this is so sad.
Yeah. You know, evidently there's cancer is involved. And, you know, there's been a lot of different differential treatments by the media over there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, not a lot of information has been released other than the cancer diagnosis.
Yeah.
You know, so they haven't really said much except there was an abdominal surgery and she wouldn't be seen till Easter. And now we have this information. You know that the royal family has always been kind of hush-hush about things.
Well, you know, and of course, King Charles is also going through cancer treatment.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but, you know, the real sort of gotcha about the whole thing is the very short and curt message that came through from Meghan Markle.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was just very... very short and sweet. And of course, you know, Prince William hasn't really been showing up at a lot of events and things lately because he's been busy spending time with Kate and making sure that their young family really understands that, you know, she is dealing with this, but they're telling their children that mommy's going to be just fine.
Well, you know, she's asked for privacy as she focuses on recovery.
Of course.
And, you know, Give her some privacy. Give the family some privacy, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, is it really the world's business what kind of cancer she has?
No, it
I
isn't.
Mean, and, you know, how she's dealing with it and everything. Yes, she's a public figure. Yes, she does have duties to her people.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in years of late, there has been more and more that has been kept secret about the royal family, especially when it comes to health issues. And I think that that's absolutely right on. You know, the fact that they've said what they've said, she's receiving treatment, and so on and so forth. I think that's enough.
Yep. Well, you know, it's sad and definitely something needs prayer, and I think that, you know, leave her alone. She's human too.
Yeah.
You know?
And she's a mom of very young children. You know, there doesn't need to be a whole lot of speculation about this because I don't care how well those children are protected through the palace or anything else. You know, there's going to be information that they hear.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't avoid it. And scaring the pants off those kids about the health of their mom or what could possibly, you know, happen to her, they don't need to hear that. You
yeah.
know, they don't need to be stressed out about what's going on.
Nope. Definitely. So remember, keep that in your prayer list and your thoughts. And got one other kind of interesting story here to cover.
Well, okie dokie.
So Kamala Harris was in Puerto Rico.
Oh, bless her heart.
And she has been, she was videoed clapping with a group as they sang a protest song.
Excellent.
And she stops once the aide translates what they're actually singing. So when, you know, when she was captured on camera clapping to a Puerto Rican protest song during a visit to San Juan on Friday, stopping short once an aide translated what singers added to the lyrics. After making marks in Puerto Rico's capital, Harris visited Goyoco Community Center and the Sanctuary's neighborhood of San Juan, where she took a tour and heard from center staff and community leaders, and a motorcade was greeted by a mix of several dozen loud demonstrators and onlookers on the sidewalk. One held a sign that says, Kamala Harris, war criminal. Another called the USA and Israel genocidal. The vice president stopped in a courtyard within the community center where a six-person group of musicians played. Pool cameras captured Harris clapping her hands and nodding along as she watched and listened. A singer then performed, you know, accompanied by a piano, and according to RNC research, Harris was clapping until an aide next to her translated what the band was saying. And the woman standing next to Harris was Miana Reyes, executive director at La Goica. And while the man is Frankie Miranda, Hispanic Federation president, according to the Associated Press, we want to know, Kamala, what did you come for? Long live free Palestine and Haiti too, the band said, according to the accountant managed by the Republican National Committee. Harris then stopped clapping and instead of, you know, folded her hands and slightly nodded as the song continued.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, kind of, you know, when you see a sign like that and looking at this drawing where it looks like flames are coming off of her, the end of her hair, which are turned up like horns, and blood coming out of her mouth.
Nice.
Do you see this picture?
No.
Oh, I thought you had your screen on.
I do, but I don't see it.
It's right there in the middle of the screen right there.
No, my screen's black.
Oh, okay. I thought yours was on. Anyway, that, you know, it was definitely a sight to see there. So
I'm sure.
Just one of many things to stay, definitely stay in prayer about, because boy, do we need it, right?
Mm-hmm.
You ready to roll into the learning section here?
Sure.
It's time to learn. It's time for the message.
So tonight, as we continue the Anchor series, I'd like to take a moment to reflect on what we've already covered together. In week one, we introduced Hebrews 6:19 and the idea of being anchored to hope. Last time, we talked about the necessity of having a firm and secure hold on the anchor of hope. And tonight, we're going to speak bluntly about the fact that we live in a world where storms will come. And I think this is a really good night to talk about this, right?
Mm-hmm.
And which highlights the necessity of having an anchor. And it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when the storms are coming, and there will be adversity, suffering, and pain. And when we are faced with any of these, we need to be prepared beforehand, ready for whatever may come our way. And I can't imagine a ship ever leaving port without an anchor on hand. So why are so many of us just floating through life with no real direction, no greater plan for adversity, and no anchor on board? Maybe we don't see the need for an anchor. Maybe we never really had a plan ahead, or maybe we've had a relatively easy life and we don't think too often about hardship or suffering. Whatever the case may be, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. When the storms come, what are you going to do? And thankfully, Jesus had some thoughts on this matter. And last time we looked at Matthew chapter 6 and how it relates to the hope we have in the kingdom of God. And this week we're going to take a look at Matthew chapter 7 and how it relates to hope in the midst of a storm. So therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, yet it did not fall, because it had a foundation on the rock. Sorry, my microphone is cutting in and out for whatever reason tonight. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practices is like a foolish man who built his house on sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash, from Matthew 7:24-27. And in this section of scripture, Jesus is putting an exclamation point on the previous teaching in Matthew 5-7, which is called the Sermon on the Mount. There are many who believe that this is for many reasons the greatest sermon ever preached. For hundreds of years, it has been commented on, scrutinized, picked apart, and countless books written about it. And the conclusion of Jesus' greatest sermon gives us this short section at the end of chapter 7, which compares two builders. One whom builds on solid rock, and the other who builds on sand. So it's about making a choice. In both cases, the builders heard the words of Jesus. Unfortunately, only one builder acted upon them and responded to the teaching of Christ. A.T. Robertson said in Word Pictures in the New Testament, "Hearing sermons is a dangerous business if one does not put them into practice." And I think we would all agree that it's easy enough to listen to something, harder to really dig in and hear, and even harder to put what you've heard into practice. Yet, it would seem that this exact choice Jesus lays out for us at the end of Matthew chapter 7, we've got to hear and respond to his teachings. Like I said, it's easy enough to listen, harder to hear, and even more difficult to put what you heard into action. But if this resonates with you, then be encouraged about this fact. Even the closest disciples of Jesus who traveled and lived with him took years upon years to really put into practice all the things they learned. So there is grace for the process, and at the same time, there's an encouragement to listen and respond. Choose to be like the wise builder who built on solid rock and not the foolish builder who built on sand. That way, when the storms come, which they will, you can make the most of it knowing your hope is firm and secure in Christ. Be sufficiently supplied. The next story is a longer one, but it highlights the beauty and freedom of living life anchored on Christ. It should come as no surprise that the story comes from the missionary journey of Paul, the apostle, who said, "I have learned to be content, whatever the circumstances," from Philippians 4:11. So for Paul, that contentment included being shipwrecked at sea and stranded for months on a strange island. And here's how the story began. When it was decided that we would sail for Italy, Paul and some other prisoners were handed over to a centurion named Julius, who belonged to the Imperial Regiment. So we boarded a ship from Andromedium, about to sail for the ports along the coast of the province of Asia. And we put to sea Aristarchus, a Macedonian from Thessalonica, was with us. The next day we landed at Sidon. And Julius, in kindness to Paul, allowed him to get his friends so they might provide for his needs. From there, we put out to sea again and passed to the lee of Cyprus. Because the winds were against us, when we had sailed across the open sea off the coast of Cilicia and Pamphylia, we landed at Myra and Lycia. And there, the centurion found an Alexandrian ship sailing for Italy and put us on board. We made slow headway for many days and had difficulty arriving off of Cnidus. When the wind did not allow us to hold our course, we sailed to the lee of Crete, opposite of Salmon. We moved along the coast with difficulty and came to a place called Fair Havens near the town of Lycia. Much time had been lost, and sailing had already become dangerous because by now it was after the Day of Atonement, so Paul warned them, "Men, I can see that our voyage is going to be disastrous and bring great loss to ship and cargo, and to our own lives also." But the centurion, instead of listening to what Paul said, followed the advice of the pilot and of the owner of the ship, from Acts 27:1-11. So in this first part of the story, we learn that Paul is a prisoner and he's being transported via ship to Italy. And by verse 9, after many exchanges, we learn that the journey's already been a difficult one and that he had lost much time. Then in verse 10, Paul says, "Men, I can see that our voyage is going to be disastrous and bring great loss to ship and cargo, and also our own lives." So from Acts 27:10. So Paul is not saying if disaster comes, he's saying when disaster comes, but as you imagine, they don't listen to him and keep going along their way. This exchange reminds me of one of the most sobering proverbs you'll read, which says, "Whoever remains stiff-necked after many rebukes will suddenly be destroyed without remedy," from Proverbs 29:1. So why are we so stubborn to the wisdom of others? Why don't we just build up our proverbial homes on solid rock? Why didn't the centurion listen to Paul's warning on the ship? So when a gentle south wind began to blow, they saw their opportunity. So they weighed anchor and sailed along the shore of Crete. Before very long, a wind of hurricane force called a northeaster swept down from the island. The ship was caught by the storm and could not head into the wind, so we gave way to it and we were driven along. As we passed the lee of a small island called Caudia, we were hardly able to make the lifeboat secure, so the men hoisted it aboard. Then they passed ropes under the ship itself to hold it together because they were afraid they would run aground on the sandbars of Syrtis. They lowered, the sea anchor and let the ship be driven along. We took such a violent battering from the storm that the next day they began to throw the cargo overboard. On the third day, they threw the ship's tackle overboard with their own hands. When neither sun nor stars appeared for many days and the storm continued raging, we finally gave up all hope of being saved. After they had gone a long time without food, Paul stood up before them and said, "Men, you should have taken my advice not to sail from Crete. Then you would have been spared yourselves this damage and loss. But now I urge you to keep your courage, because not one of you will be lost. Only the ship will be destroyed. Last night an angel of God, to whom I belong and serve, stood beside me and said, 'Do not be afraid, Paul. You must stand trial before Caesar. And God has graciously given you the lives of all who sail with you. So keep your courage. Men, for I have faith in God that it will happen just as he told me. Nevertheless, we must run aground on some island.'" So on the 14th night, we were still being driven across the Adriatic Sea. When about midnight, the sailors sensed they were approaching land. They took soundings and found that the water was 120 feet deep. A short time later, they took soundings again and found that it was 90 feet deep. Fearing that we would be dashed against the rocks, they dropped their four anchors from the stern and prayed for daylight. In an attempt to escape from the ship, the sailors let the lifeboat down into the sea, pretending they were going to lower some anchors from the bow. Then Paul said to the centurion and the soldiers, "Unless these men stay with the ship, you cannot be saved." So the soldiers cut the ropes that held the lifeboat and let it drift away. Just before dawn, Paul urged them all to eat. "For the last 14 days," he said, "you have been in constant suspense and have gone without food. You haven't eaten anything. Now I urge you to take some food. You need it to survive. None of you will lose a single hair from your head." After he said this, he took some bread and gave thanks to God in front of them all. Then he broke it and began to eat. They were all encouraged and ate some food themselves. Altogether, there were 276 of us on board. And when they had eaten as much as they wanted, they lightened the ship by throwing the grain into the sea. When daylight came, they did not recognize the land, but they saw a bay with a sandy beach, where they decided they would run the ship aground if they could. Cutting loose the anchors, they left them in the sea, and at the same time untied the ropes that held the rudders. Then they hoisted the foresail to the wind and made for the beach. But the ship struck a sandbar and ran aground. The bow stuck fast and would not move, and the stern was broken into pieces by the pounding of the surf. The soldiers planned to kill the prisoners to prevent any of them from swimming away and escaping, but the centurion wanted to spare Paul's life and kept them from carrying out their plan. He ordered those who could swim to jump overboard first and get to land. The rest were really were to get there on planks and other pieces of the ship. And this way, everyone reached land safely, from Acts 27:13-44. So in this section, we see that the storm comes, the ship is wrecked, and the people involved are all terrified except for Paul, who has complete faith and assurance that all will end well. And as the story transitions to Acts chapter 28, we learned the land they've been stranded on is Malta, where the islanders show unusual kindness. Once safely on shore, we found out that the island was called Malta. The islanders showed us unusual kindness. They built a fire and welcomed us all because it was raining and cold. Paul gathered a pile of brushwood and he put it on the fire. A viper driven out by the heat fastened itself on his hand. And when the islanders saw the snake hanging from his hand, they said to each other, "This man must be a murderer, for though he escaped from the sea, the goddess Justice has not allowed him to live." But Paul shook the snake off into the fire and suffered no ill effects. The people expected him to swell up or suddenly fall dead, but after waiting a long time and seeing nothing unusual happen to him, they changed their minds and said he was a god. From Acts 28:1-6. So a venomous snake darts out from the campfire and bites Paul, and still he seems unbothered by it. Shaking the snake off his hand, the people are suspicious, then amazed, and finally in awe. So there was an estate nearby that belonged to Publius, the chief official of the island. He welcomed us into his home and showed us generous hospitality for 3 days. His father was sick in bed, suffering from fever and dysentery. Paul went in to see him and after prayer placed his hands on him and healed him. When this had happened, the rest of the sick on the island came and were cured. They honored us in many ways, and when we were ready to sail, they furnished us with supplies we needed. From Acts 28:7-10. So as the story comes to a close, Paul meets the local Roman official and proceeds to start a healing ministry on the island of Malta, where the ship had been wrecked and everyone was stranded. After 3 months, another ship had been secured and the crew was ready to leave. The people of Malta honored us in many ways, and when we were ready to sail, they furnished us with the supplies we needed. Through this story, we see what can happen when you've made a choice to build your home, your life, on Jesus. We see what can come from a life that is firm and secure, anchored to Jesus. And here are a few things I saw in the story, and maybe you'd add some others. Sorry, I just lost my place. Paul was completely content through the violent storm, the shipwreck, and being stranded. In fact, he seemed to take it all in stride, and he never once complained that his plans were ruined. He was very open-handed through it all. Paul took advantage of the time he had while in Malta. He preached the gospel and healed the sick. He could have pouted and moped for 3 months, but instead he made the best of the situation and treated it as an opportunity instead of an hindrance. God supplied to the people of Malta everything the crew needed. They had food, a place to stay, a new ship, and the provision to continue their journey. God worked it all together for good. From Romans 8:28. So, through the storms, shipwrecks, snake bites, and sufferings of life, you can trust God will be faithful. He will work all things according to his will and his purpose. So when the storms come, choose him. Choose his ways above all others. Don't stiffen your neck and reject good wisdom. And like Paul, who knows where the journey may take you, you just might end up on a remote island somewhere for 3 months, ministering to people and growing in fellowship with others. So as I've mentioned many times tonight, it's not a matter of, you know, if the storms of life come, it's a matter of when they come. And you need to think, will you be ready? And will you have a firm and secure anchor for your soul? And I just can't imagine a ship, you know, like that, ever leaving port without an anchor on hand. So why are so many of us just floating through life with no real direction, no greater plan for adversity, and no anchor on board? Maybe that's somebody today. Maybe you don't see the need for an anchor. Maybe you've never really had a plan ahead, or maybe you've had a relatively easy life and you don't think too often about hardship or suffering. Whatever the case may be, and wherever you find yourself today, I want to encourage you to choose Jesus. Choose him over any other thing, even if it sounds good and sounds like a secure option. I can assure you, if it's not Jesus, it's not going to hold fast through the fiercest storms of life. And when the storm or suffering or adversity arises, make sure you've got a firm grip on Christ, the solid rock. What do you think about that?
I think that's pretty good.
A lot of insightful advice there, right?
Exactly.
Oh, my goodness. Well, as we're entering the Holy Week this week, right?
Mm-hmm.
Palm Sunday today, and
the end of Lent is here.
Yep, and leading all the way up until, you know, next Sunday, the resurrection. It's going to be a good week. Going to be a really good week. You got any last thoughts over there tonight?
No, I don't.
I just want people to sit back and think about all the stories tonight. And think about where their anchors are. I want to, you know, leave you with those kind of thoughts. There was a lot to be said in that story and a lot to relate to a lot of things that are going on right now. And I think it's really a good time to reflect on that and prayerful thought. What do you think?
I agree.
All right. Well, we will be here next Sunday night with a message on Easter Sunday. We hope that everybody has a great Holy Week, prayer-fulfilled week. Think about a lot of things that are going on and a lot of things that you're hearing and have some prayerful thought on that. And we will see you right here next Sunday night, and we'll have an Easter-style message for everyone. And hopefully better news, right?
Oh, we can always hope.
All right. Everybody have a great rest of your week. We'll leave you with a little message here at the end. And we'll see you right here next week.
Want to reach out to us? Here's how. Contact us at ChristianPolititalk@gmail.com. That's Christian, PolititaLk, @gmail.com. We look forward to hearing from you. Sound Image Productions.